Welcome, everybody, to our weekly Course in Miracles study group. I'm Corinne, and I'm so excited that you all are here as we kick off reading the cameo essays in the complete and annotated edition of A Course in Miracles. As we always do, before we start reading, let's join together in a brief meditation. So just coming together and just dropping in. If you'd like, allowing your eyes to close. And allowing your mind to turn inwards and connect to a place in you that we all share. It's this quiet, still space that always exists despite whatever is happening on the surface of our minds and in our lives. And as we come into this quiet, still space, let us connect with our willingness. Our willingness to loose the world from all we thought it was. Our willingness to release beliefs, perceptions, fears. Our willingness to release anything that's in the way of our recognizing the truth. Offering our willingness to the Holy Spirit gladly, trusting that we will receive whatever it is that we need to hear to receive in tonight's call. This holy instant we give to you. Be you in charge, for we would follow you, certain that your direction gives us peace. And if we need a word, a thought, or a tranquil, open mind, these are the gifts that Holy Spirit gives. So we gladly place Holy Spirit in charge tonight by our request. Taking a nice, mindful, and deep breath in and out. And coming together to our perception of right here, right now. Yay. That's all I have to say is just yay. Actually, I have a lot more to say. So welcome everybody who has joined us. And if you will, please turn to cameo number one in the CE edition of A Course in Miracles. It's page 1683. Which is in Appendix 1. It's called This Is Not a Selfish Gift. This is what we will be reading tonight. And as I said earlier, this is 9 pages. I don't think in the history of our 9-year study group we've ever read 9 pages, but we're going to see if we can, because this is much more of a story than it is like a line-by-line analysis of what is in the actual course in the text. Couple of other announcements before we do this. The program that I've been telling you all about for a few weeks now, the Love Lens, has launched. This is the program that is on A Course in Miracles, Racism and the Unified Mind. That's the subtitle, where me and 3 other women will be talking about race and A Course in Miracles. And it's going to be so powerful and so healing. So if you have interest, please, please feel free to join us if you haven't already. I'm just going to pop the link into the chat for those of you who are here live right now. And that's the registration link. The Facebook group that we have, I will be sharing these videos in the future. We'll broadcast live into our Facebook group. That video will live there for 1 week. Then it will be taken down and replaced by the next video, but you can always access the audios as usual through the link that you were emailed that has like the Zoom information in it. There's a link at the bottom of that email that has all the archives from all of our years, not 9 years, but more recent years on that part of my website. And I think that's it. So Laurel has generously volunteered to read with me. So I'll kick us off and she and I are going to alternate paragraphs. Laurel, I'll let you know if we're going to pause at some point. And I'm going to just go with guidance for that. So let's go ahead and begin. So this is not a selfish gift. And before I just begin reading, I do want to say that these essays were written mostly, I believe, I'm not sure if Greg Mackey helped, but Robert Perry, who's the lead editor of this edition of the course. So when we're reading, we're mostly reading his writing, but you'll see indented quotes from Helen Schuckman's notes, from her handwritten notes. Sometimes it's from Absence from Felicity. Sometimes it's from Helen's autobiography. That's what the footnotes will point out. But in these cameos, Robert has really put together a picture by taking all these different quotes to give us some context as to what was going on with Helen and Bill when the course started to come through, which is what this cameo is about. So let's begin. Cameo number one, this is not a selfish gift. In June of 1965, after years of conflict in their professional lives, Helen Schuckman and Bill Thetford joined in the goal of demonstrating another way, which they hoped would transform their working relationships. This triggered in Helen that summer a series of startling inner visions and paranormal experiences. Then, apparently toward the end of that summer, she made what turned out to be a prescient announcement. And I'll read this, Laura. I'll turn it over to you for the next paragraph. One day during that same summer, I told Bill I was about to do something very unexpected. I had no idea what it was, but I knew it was going to happen soon. At Bill's urging, I had been keeping a sort of diary since our visit to Virginia Beach. Now, Bill suggested that if I wrote down whatever occurred to me in connection with the quote-unquote unexpected something, I might find out what it was.
Therefore, sometime around October 18th or 19th, Helen began writing down anything that seemed relevant. She said in her autobiography, "Nothing much came of my attempts at first, and I was on the point of giving them up. But actually, these early writings clearly reveal a spiritual impulse that was trying to emerge into consciousness, like a new shoot just starting to push through the soil."
She records spiritual reflections that do not at all sound like the musings of a self-professed, quote-unquote, militant atheist. "I think under the projection and all that stuff is a hidden nostalgia for the soul. We want it back so we can identify with it because that is what we are, really, and somewhere we know it. This AM, this morning, it occurred to me that I had no right to waste anything, money, clothes, or my own life, because thus everything has to be used right. It all has a place in the plan. And you must not throw gifts away."
It seems clear that these thoughts are coming from somewhere beyond Helen's conscious mind. Indeed, an insight she writes down regarding her tendency to forget names, it may be more a fear of involvement or interaction, is later identified by the course's author as coming from him. I emphasize again that your tendency to forget names is not hostility, but a fear of involvement or recognition.
She records dreams with obvious spiritual content. In one account, she says, "The crucifixion was a total rejection of the body by others, projection, and its destruction, which was really a purification. As a result, the soul could enter entirely into the temple, heal it, and use it only constructively."
She also records prayers including a long, impassioned prayer for Dave Diamond, a friend who is dying from brain cancer. This prayer is infused with ideas that will later appear in the course, as we can see in these excerpts. Dave, don't give in. You have a real mission. Don't lose your chance. Miracles are the natural law. Then I ask Christ to help Dave know that he was there and to see him and know the truth so he could be free. Your spirit and mine can unite, and then two of us have come together in Christ's name. Jesus promised to be there, Dave. Your brain does not matter if you will understand life as Jesus did.
Finally, sprinkled throughout these writings, she records statements from a voice that speaks it as if it is Jesus and that Helen calls Christ. I was really quite depressed this AM, which is now very unusual. I used to be all the time. But he says, "Be of good cheer. I have overcome the world."
Then on October 20th, everything changed. The voice, which we will call by the name that it later gave itself, Jesus, went from showing up in occasional brief statements to delivering a more extended discourse. And this discourse, which was specifically about Bill receiving guidance and Helen asking on his behalf, became the jumping off point for the dictation of A Course in Miracles.
Earlier, Helen had written down the following items. 1, ask what is interfering with Bill's meditation and how to overcome this. And 2, Bill's list. Now, on the day before the course would begin coming through, Helen returns to these two items, the first of which is specifically about Bill's ability to hear guidance in meditation. He has apparently been wondering how he can access a gift like the one that Helen has stumbled upon. Here's the question that she asks of her guidance. I said he promised to come when he was called on, and Bill asks for guidance and does not receive, and has really tried to knock, and it has not been open to him. I think the door is ajar a bit, but I really wouldn't call it very open. Is it all right if I ask you for him since he wants me to?
Before recording this question, Helen had actually started to write down Jesus's answer. She wrote, 1, if you do not get an answer, it is always because you ask amiss, but then cross this out. Now she writes his answer down in full. I can't answer when he asks amiss. When he asks right, I have answered. He has a tendency to get part of an answer and decide himself when to disconnect. He should ask if that's all. Since I don't know when he's going to ring off, I have to be very short and even cryptic. It chops messages up too much.
The main problem then is that Bill is too quick to hang up the phone, so to speak. Now Jesus elaborates on further areas of interference. There is also interference from three major areas, the first three items on the numbered list that follows. 1, he doesn't have much real confidence that I will get through. He never just claims his rights. He should begin with much more confidence. I'll keep my promises. The writing now apparently switches to Helen speaking to Bill, but you do not act as if you really expect him to.
This attitude of asking with confidence, as if claiming a birthright, is the same attitude encouraged in the workbook's instructions for listening for guidance. For example, there is a message waiting for you. Be confident that you will receive it. Remember that it belongs to you. 2, there's another kind of related error, which is illustrated by his question about when are you going to call the hospital? It's not right to interfere just to check. It's selfish. But more than that, it makes things too personal, which always implies doubt.
Without knowing what the call to the hospital is about, it's hard to be sure what this means. Jesus mentions this situation later, saying, "Remember your slip about the effect on Neurological Institute and his, Bill's, asking when you were going to call up." Whatever the details, Bill is being interfering and even selfish due to his own lack of trust. The implication may be that Bill's asking for inner guidance at times has the same quality. This might be a clarification of the earlier idea that Bill sometimes asks amiss.
Number three, he has to learn better concentration. His mind flits about too much for good communication. Suggest a very short phrase like, "Here I am, Lord," and now addressing Bill directly. Don't think of anything else. Just pull in your mind slowly from everywhere else and center it on these four words.
Here, Jesus gives Bill a meditation technique, which involves putting all of his attention on being fully present to God and on nothing else. The idea is that this kind of concentrated focus on God will help Bill hear guidance. This, too, is a foreshadowing of the workbook. It anticipates the workbook's meditation instructions, which sometimes involve making oneself fully present to God. See Lesson 183, for example. And it anticipates the workbook's training in stilling one's mind in order to hear guidance. His voice awaits your silence, for his word cannot be heard unless your mind is quiet for a while and meaningless desires have been stilled.
Number four, tell him to be sure not to mistake your role. If he overreacts to or overevaluates you as a person, both of you will be in danger. Bill already feels that he lacks his own access to God. If he puts Helen on a pedestal as a spiritual idol, he will further denigrate himself and dangerously inflate her. And number five, he should try to get his own list. Armstrong may just mean his own one or own arm is strong.
The nature of Bill's list is not specified, but from what little we know, it seems very similar to Helen's list, which is discussed in the notes just days later. Her list is a list of people selected by guidance who have thrown away their chalice of atonement, their reconciliation with God, and who need Helen's help to get it back. She has been assigned, in other words, to hand them back their own chalice. Like Helen's list, Bill's list is also apparently a list of people, in that someone named Joe Armstrong is twice mentioned in connection with it. And like Helen's, it seems to be a list revealed by guidance, in that Helen appears to be asking Jesus, who is on Bill's list.
However, rather than hearing the names of those on Bill's list, Helen gets a very different message. He should try to get his own list. The name Armstrong is then apparently turned into a pun in which Bill's arm is strong enough for him to get his own guidance. When it comes to guidance, in other words, Bill can rely on his own strength. He shouldn't be leaning so heavily on Helen. This somewhat curt guidance may sound quite definite, but it will soon be reversed.
Jesus's discourse on Bill's hearing ends at this point, and things take a dramatic turn. It's as if during this guidance, something has been building in the background and is now ready to break through. But before it can do so, Jesus needs to explain to Helen the bigger picture. He, Jesus, thinks it's time for some explanations, which we're probably ready for. There are always risks in speed-ups. The whole thing was undertaken because things were getting behind schedule because so many people persistently lost more than they gained.
Helen later, in her autobiography, fleshed out the thoughts that rapidly entered her mind at this point. I was given a sort of mental explanation, though, in the form of a series of related thoughts that crossed my mind in rapid succession and made a reasonably coherent whole. According to this information, the world situation was worsening to an alarming degree. People all over the world were being called on to help and were making their individual contributions as part of an overall prearranged plan. I had apparently agreed to take down A Course in Miracles as it would be given me. The voice was fulfilling its part in the agreement as I would fulfill mine. I would be using abilities I had developed very long ago in which I was not really ready to use again. Because of the acute emergency, however, the usual slow evolutionary process was being bypassed in what might be described as a celestial speed-up. I could sense the urgency that lay behind this explanation, whatever I might think about its content. The feeling was conveyed to me that time was running out.
So we're going to pause in just a moment. I'm going to read one more paragraph, this short paragraph, and then we'll pause. Finally, it is clear what has been happening to Helen. Before her birth, she had agreed to enter this life in order to play her part in a global plan to restore humanity's forward progress. And this agreement, after slumbering for decades, has at last stirred to life. So we're going to pause there. Laurel, thank you. We'll continue. We'll sure. definitely, I think, finish. I do want to finish tonight, so we'll come back to this. But we just read a lot, and I want to just pause here and talk for a little bit and open this up for maybe what was coming up for you as we were reading these things, because there's so much here in this section. Now, I just want to give a really practical example. Well, I don't know that it's any more practical than what Helen described, but relatable to me. When we first started reading, and it says that Helen told Bill, she said, I was about to do something very unexpected. I had no idea what it was, but I knew it was going to happen soon. I just want to reflect that the program that I've just launched on the Love Lens, there's been this energy behind that program, behind going into and not turning away from the issue of race and racism. There's been an energy behind that that I have felt and sensed so deep within me that it is part of this plan for, as it says that we just read, moving humanity forward. I've just had such a deep knowing that this is just something that I've been asked to do, as many of us who are feeling the call to be involved in that work are part of as well. So I could really relate to that. I also want to highlight now that, oh my gosh, there's just so much here. When Helen says, initially, when she first started writing down, as Bill encouraged her to jot down what was coming forward, she says she feels like underneath the projection and all that stuff, makes me think of the stuff of the world, is a hidden nostalgia for the soul. So here we are in this world, and this is what we're searching for. We're looking, everyone, every single one of us on this planet wants the peace of God. We want that connection with our soul on a deep, deep, deep soul level. We want to feel that deep, satisfying love. Only we look for it literally in all the wrong places. We think things out there have to be a certain way, or that it's something lacking that I need to fill through a relationship or a thing. I love how Helen's writing right there just feels so spot on. I think what I'm going to do is just highlight a few things that stood out to me, and then I'll open it up for things that stood out to you, examples, questions that you might have. When Helen is praying for Dave Diamond, I love how she says to him, your brain does not matter if you will understand life as Jesus did. And I feel like that applies to all of us. And even if we have individual body parts that cause us some challenges, reminding yourself of this, saying this to yourself, your whatever part does not matter if you will understand life as Jesus did. Our bodies don't matter if we will understand life as Jesus did. This means that this is not life. This thing that we are experiencing right now is a dream, and our true life, that life has continued, as the Course says, uninterrupted. Another place that I really want to point out and talk about is Bill's claiming his right to guidance. So this whole bit on how Jesus says, I can't answer when he asks amiss. He has a tendency to get part of an answer and decide himself when to disconnect. He should ask if that's all. Since I don't know when he's going to ring off, I have to be very short and even cryptic. And then it goes on below that to say that Bill doesn't have much real confidence that I will get through. He never disclaims his rights. Meaning, we need to claim our right to guidance, that this is something that is our birthright. It is our birthright to hear guidance. It's our birthright to have that deep, deep, deep connection to our source. So these two things about, actually, there's the other one. There's the meditation technique as well. I'm wondering if we can all just sort of relate to this, that when we are trying to get quiet, number one, we probably have a lot of mind wandering. So this meditation technique that comes on the next page about focusing on a phrase like, here I am, Lord, and not allowing your mind to focus on anything else, there's something that we can experiment with there. We can experiment with claiming our right to guidance. So when we are asking for guidance, instead of doing it half-heartedly, sheepishly, doing it confidently, that I expect that I'm going to receive the guidance because it is my birthright. And the third thing that we can sort of experiment with in our own journey is when we're asking for guidance, we should ask if that's all. Like, am I done? Do I need to listen any longer? So those things are just so incredibly helpful and striking to me. I'd love to pause here and open it up for a little bit and see. I just noticed that there are some comments in the chat. I'd like to see if anybody has a section, a reading, a sentence that stood out to you, maybe a personal example from your own life. We can just open it up at this point. And since we have, let's see, I can't see everybody on the screen. How about if you are on camera and have access, let me say it this way, if you're on your laptop and you have access to the chat, you can just type in like Q for question, and I'll know that you just want to say something even, and then that's how we can determine an order instead of everybody hopping off mute at the same time. So if you're able to put a Q in the chat, that means that you are in the queue to come off of mute. If you're on the phone, I would say just try to unmute yourself, and somebody raised their hand. Judy.
Yes, Corinne.
Judy. I'm glad you could take yourself off mute because this is new for me.
Well, thank you so much for, you know, this is my first time with you guys, and I don't want to take up a lot of time because I obviously did not or was not aware of this purple book with the additional that you're referring to, although I've been sort of doing some research while you guys were talking. So I'll be better prepared next time because I had no idea that this even existed, that there was this additional. Is this what you guys usually do during this Sunday call?
Yes, usually, and Courtney, I see you'll be next. Usually in the text, I give the page references for all the editions. I'm reading from this purple edition, but these cameo essays are specific to this purple edition. You don't have to get the book if you don't want it. You can just listen when we're reading, but it's a wonderful edition because it has so much restored text. So if you are a Course in Miracles junkie like I am and want to learn absolutely everything you can about the process that Helen and Bill went through and everything that got edited out, it's a wonderful edition to read from, and it has really deepened my connection with Holy Spirit.
Thank you so much, because that has really been an additional bit of information that I was unaware of. So I'm going to look, being the type of person I am, I'll look for more of it. Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you, Judy.
You're welcome. Thank you.
I saw Courtney. Courtney, come on off of mute. I'm hoping you can.
Oh, can you hear me?
Yes. Hello.
Oh, sorry, I had to do it off of my phone. Hi. Well, I'm really enjoying this essay, and it's really interesting to listen and hear about. But I've been wondering if you could give any more examples of how to ask for guidance, because I feel like whenever I ask for guidance, it's always really of the world and of a specific situation. Mm-hmm. And then it's kind of like I'm guiding the guidance at that point. Uh-huh. So if you or anyone else had any suggestions, or we could just talk a little bit more about what Jesus says guidance is and what it really meant to Helen and Bill. That would be really interesting and
yeah.
helpful for me.
Oh, great question, Courtney. And I'll share a few thoughts, and then if anybody else wants to jump in to add. To me, guidance, so I feel like in its purest form, for me, guidance is almost like a prayer where I'm asking for my connection, for my awareness of the truth to be restored and to lead me. I don't want to decide for myself. I want to be used by God and put into whatever situation that I am needed where I can do whatever it is that I feel moved to do. So in the deepest level, to me, it feels like just a deep connection with Source, with Holy Spirit, with Jesus, whoever you feel comfortable naming. Now, what's fascinating is that when I was studying from like, before I got this purple edition, actually before I got the Urtext, if anybody's familiar with the Urtext, that's another edition of the course that has a lot of the deleted material in it. And when I started reading that, it started occurring to me that we can ask for guidance about very specific things. Now, when I was just reading from the Blue Book, which I also love, the Foundation for Inner Peace edition, in that edition, it wasn't as clear to me. I felt like guidance was more sort of about maybe general things, kind of like, you know, be involved here, but maybe not there. But in the Urtext, there's actually, and I think it might be mentioned in one of these cameos, Helen is prompted by Jesus to ask for guidance about a coat that she wants to find and that she can use the hire shopping service in order to save time and spend more time with him. So like, let's hold on to that for a moment, that if we're asking for guidance, where would you have me go? What would you have me say and to whom? And we're allowing ourselves to be moved in those directions. That's saving time. It's like, we're not, I'm a really good procrastinator. So it's like, no more procrastination. You be in charge, put me where you need me. And the time that we save, we get to spend with Spirit. We get to just, you know, be and dwell. So that's a great way of asking for guidance, is that prayer. Where would you have me go? What would you have me say? Where would you have me go? What would you have me do? What would you have me say? And to whom, I think is how it goes. And that's what guidance is really all about. It's asking those things. Now, we can ask for specifics too, because like I just gave you the example about the coat. If we have a specific situation, we can ask for guidance about that. But what you just said about you guiding your guidance, Courtney, that's such fine-tuned awareness, because we all can get in the way of guidance if we've already decided what we want to hear. If we've decided what we want to hear, we're not going to hear anything different because we know what we want to hear already. We have to almost clear that out, empty ourselves of all expectations. And instead, once we've emptied ourselves, open ourselves to possibilities. Now, my process of asking for guidance, to me, the answer often comes as a feeling. It comes as a feeling of that deep connection with my soul, with God, with Holy Spirit. And that's, I describe it as like an inner resonance or like an inner light that feels like it comes on. So it's actually a feeling in my body. So this guidance process does not just happen all up here. It doesn't come through for me all as thoughts. It can come as thoughts, but it's a feeling in my body. So this is where I feel like so important that we learn how to be in our bodies, because that's often where the feelings come through. Courtney, did I speak to some, I just kind of went on and on. Did that give you some ideas? I can't hear you. Actually, you're still muted. Or I have to ask, I'm asking you to unmute. Let's see. Did that work?
Oh, can you hear me now?
Yes. Yes.
Sorry. I have to do it both on my phone and on here. Oh, yeah. Gotcha. That's really helpful. And the feeling of being in your body is so true for me too. It's like, I can understand when it's just me saying, oh, this is what Holy Spirit said, or really feeling it. So I appreciate that. And you awesome. Talking to it.
Yeah. Thank you, Courtney. Does anybody want to add to what I said? Anybody else have some other particular way maybe that you ask for guidance? Uma. Hi, Uma. It's so good to see you.
Hi. I just wanted to echo a couple of things you said. I just finished the CE's workshop on guidance.
Oh, nice.
There's a couple of things that Robert said that were super helpful to me. So one of them is like along the lines of that coat, the coat cameo. Mm-hmm. One of the points that he taught was not to make the questions too specific, which was so interesting because Helen was asking where can I go to buy this coat that I want? And I think that her teaching, the voice was telling her like that's too specific of a question, and that a better question is where would I go to get the coat that I'm meant to have? You know what I mean? And so that's a really interesting thing that we talked about in that class, is how a lot of times when we ask a question, we ask it in a way that's very, I don't know, black and white or yes or no. And often guidance will come through and give us an option that we hadn't thought about at all, like a third option or something that wasn't even, you know, that we weren't even considering. And so I've been more mindful of that lately since hearing that teaching, because that makes the, you know, what would you have me do? Where would you have that? Those questions even more, you know, because they're general.
It's right.
Like super, super general. So yeah, I just thought I would mention that.
That's so helpful, Uma. And that, I'm so glad that you mentioned that you just took that workshop on guidance with the Circle of Atonement. Anybody, I know maybe some of you are in Course Companions, like anybody who has additional learning from actually anywhere else, please always feel free to bring that up, because we're all teachers and learners and we all learn from each other. And Uma, I'm so glad that you said what you said, because by sort of backing up and making the question more general, we are giving room for, like you said, things that we haven't thought of before. And that is, I can, although I'm not thinking of a specific example at the moment, no, well, I can think of times when I felt like, okay, what, how's it going to be? Is it going to be X or Y? And then sort of letting it all go, and suddenly Z pops up. So it's that kind of being willing to sort of step back and being open that can let those unexpected things come forth. So thank you so much for that. That was super helpful.
Corinne.
Yes. Who's that? Paula. Paula. Hi, Paula. Oh, it's so good to see you.
And Deidre. Oh, my goodness. You know, sometimes I find guidance just comes spontaneously. And I had a silly example today. I was making I was thinking about making a gumbo. It's a Southern dish.
Uh-huh.
And the thought occurred to me, oh, wait a minute, maybe it's a filet gumbo, because I was looking for a recipe. And then I thought to myself, what is filet anyway? I swear to you, a short time later, I'm watching a cooking program on TV, and this chef says, filet, he started talking about filet gumbo, and he said, filet is actually a sassafras. It's sassafras that they use as a thickener.
Uh-huh.
And I just, it happens a lot.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
It's sort of like on a spontaneous level where you just trust that you're going to get the answer. And, but it doesn't, you know, your life doesn't depend on it really. And right. It's just such a hoop when you do get it. And to get it that quickly was really fun.
That's awesome, Paula. I love your examples. Oh, I love
thank
them.
You.
Thank Thank you. I have to just say, Paula and Deidre, Paul, I know Carol and Pat are here, have kind of been like on a majority of these calls over the past 9 years. And this is the first time I'm like seeing everybody on camera since we're on Zoom. So it's just so super fun for me. Thank you, Paula.
You're welcome.
Deidre, did you want to add something? I'm putting you on the spot. No, you're good. Okay. Anybody else about anything that we've read so far? Any questions, examples, comments? Dave, I see your hands.
Okay, cool.
Hello.
That's the way we do it in the other classes. So
you just wave your hands. Okay.
I should have typed into the chat, but my experience with guidance is I may as well have been Bill. You know, all those suggestions that that you read, you know, definitely apply to me. Usually, I notice that I seem to get guidance when I'm not trying. And what I've learned to pay attention to is the thoughts that just kind of pop into my mind without any, you know, machinations or trying to figure anything out. Mm-hmm. And it's usually something like, huh, I never thought of that, you know. So anyway, I just wanted to mention that.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Thank you. So helpful. Beautiful. And I do actually, I'm just looking ahead on the pages. It looks like I can see everybody who has their camera on one screen. So I should be able to see your hands if they go up. What else do I want to say? Let me just look over this, what we've read so far. We'll continue and finish out the reading. I wanted to also highlight where it says, Bill already feels that he lacks his own access to God. If he puts Helen on a pedestal as a spiritual idol, he will further denigrate himself and dangerously inflate her. I think we all need to keep in mind that you have your connection to God, to Holy Spirit, every single one of us. You do not need somebody to translate that for you. You don't need somebody to listen for you. If somebody says they need to do that for you, you should run the other way. It's just always, I feel like, important for us to remember that we all have that access to God directly. And if we're not sensing it, if we're not feeling it, experiment with some of these things. Experiment with asking with confidence, even if you're faking it till you're making it. Asking with confidence, claiming your rights to guidance, asking if that's all, you know, if you've been quiet and asking. Sometimes even when I'm reading A Course in Miracles or doing my workbook lesson, I will say, like, should I keep reading? Am I done? Am I done, you know, in this practice period? Or am I done, you know, reading to see if there's something that comes up and it's either a feeling of like, nope, all good, or go for a little bit longer. And this meditation technique, I just want to highlight again one more time. Here I am, Lord. Here I am. Here I am. This is something, a very short phrase, like, here I am, Lord, don't think of anything else. So perhaps that can be something that you experiment with in your meditation next time you sit down. Of course, then it goes on to talk about the celestial speed up. If we can just pause and think for a moment about everything that's happening in the world, how it seems like things are getting more intense, celestial speed up, celestial speed up, celestial speed up. We are learning lessons that we would have taken lifetimes to learn, and now we're getting them in like rapid succession, like on probably multiple times a day. So that thought has been actually comforting, very comforting to me lately, to think about everything that's happening as this celestial speed up. And we are being summoned as miracle workers to show up, to be a voice for love, a voice for truth, to demonstrate that there is another way. So let's actually, I think right now is a great time for us to continue reading. And Laurel, did I finish? Do you want to pick up with the next paragraph? I think it starts with receiving this information as a turning point. Okay, awesome. Thank you.
Okay. Receiving this information is a turning point. But instead of the process now rolling forward, things come to a grinding halt. Helen now writes this message from Jesus in large letters in the center of the page. Stop. Clearly, something has temporarily gone wrong. This leads Helen to offer to tear it all up. Helen, I'll tear it up if you want. Jesus, no, maybe tomorrow. Now just write this. Remember your slip about the effect on Neurological Institute and his bills asking when you were going to call up.
Without more context, this is a very opaque comment. It is obviously another reference to Bill's question, when are you going to call the hospital? But more than that, we cannot say. I can keep reading since that's really short. Yeah. Now Helen writes an even more emphatic message from Jesus. Be careful. Go on.
Okay. We can tell this caution comes from Jesus since he repeats it in his next comments. The reference to Jonathan is to Helen's husband, Louis, whom she often called Jonathan in the notes. Also, tell Bill about Jonathan's remark. I do not like you all sweetness and light. I like you a little sharp, if you get what I mean. And again, be very careful.
Something is clearly wrong. Helen has been told with great emphasis to stop and be careful, and then to again be very careful. Helen even offers to tear it up if you want. The overall implication seems to be that Helen is in danger of proceeding inappropriately. But in what way?
To understand this, we have to look at the major temptation Helen had faced up to this point. In the summer, she had discovered that she had psychic abilities. About this, she reported, I was actually becoming rather proud of the acquisition of such dramatic abilities, and I even caught brief glimpses of fantasies of power and prestige crossing the back of my mind. This was the major obstacle she had faced in the run-up up to the course, her ego being inflated by her newfound abilities.
This obstacle was shifted by two pivotal experiences, both of which Helen marked as crucial turning points in accepting her function. In the first, she had a psychic vision of a church she was sure she and Bill would see when visiting the Mayo Clinic in Minnesota. This, however, turned out to be a useless application of her abilities, as Bill discovered that the church existed but had been raised long ago to make way for the clinic itself. The true use of her abilities came out on the way home, when she was able to intuitively feel waves and waves of misery going through a young woman in the airport. This far more practical use of Helen's psychic abilities enabled her and Bill to render critical service to this woman at a turning point in her life.
The Mayo Clinic experience was followed by, and apparently led to, an inner vision in which she discovered an ancient scroll on the floor of a cave. As she unrolled the scroll, she saw that the center panel said simply, God is. Opening the scroll further, she saw tiny letters begin to emerge on the right and left panels. She was told that on the left side, she could read all of the past, and on the right side, all of the future. Helen, however, chose to reject the reading of past and future and stick with just the center panel. This represented a key decision to use her abilities only for God, not for psychic feats. Helen seemed to have believed that this was where she really accepted her function as scribe of the course.
The road to accepting her function then had been one of repeatedly refusing to use her unusual abilities to fuel her ego, and instead giving them to God to use to help others. Returning to our account of the late October dictation, it is probable then that as she stands on the brink of actually beginning her function, she is facing some version of the same choice again.
The particular way in which her ego wants to control her abilities becomes clear in what she writes the next morning, the morning of October 21st, a.m. It crossed my mind last night that something very wrong had happened. I got mad because I thought I shouldn't be asked to ask for you, Bill, and it was a form of exploitation that was very dangerous for me and represented an avoidance technique for you. I thought the whole thing was so dangerous that I had to tell you not to do it again. Briefly across my mind, but with no emotional impact at all, which is always suspicious, that I might just resent asking for someone else because I prefer the exclusive idea.
Here it is. Helen now identifies what had gone so wrong last night. Her suspicion that it was dangerously unhealthy for Bill to ask her for guidance was actually the voice of her ego, wanting her to keep this gift as her own private treasure, as a spring that only she could drink from. As the dictation proceeds, Jesus now elaborates on this. Christ says, "I can tell something is wrong whenever I get a snappy answer." He wouldn't say, "Tell him to get his own list that way. The tone is wrong."
So that fifth point, that Bill should try to get his own list, was in fact an error. It was a distortion introduced by the exclusive idea. Helen's urge to keep her gift to herself is warping her hearing, turning Jesus's voice into something snappy, and even, as he will say later, mean. This seems to solve the puzzle of why Jesus told her to stop and be careful. He can hardly proceed to dictate the course to her if her ego is taking control of her gift and distorting his voice.
This morning, it was very clear to me that in connection with you, Bill, I have not been right since I asked you what you wanted, so I could really be asking for you. This was essential, and except for the list where I slipped, the answer should be respected.
Instead of asking on Bill's behalf being very dangerous and an avoidant technique, it is in fact essential. And except for that point about Bill's list, what she heard was indeed accurate and should be respected.
You have every right. In fact, you should ask me to ask for you. This is not a selfish gift, and it is a real one. This upsets me too, and has to be used for others, and particularly you. Jesus says, ask Bill, please, to help you get over being mean about it fast. And then a note, at the moment, I have serious doubts about everything. This is holding everything up.
Here on the cusp of the course dictation actually beginning, Helen seems to have faced another version of the choice she made in the Mayo Clinic experience and in her Squirrel Cave vision. In the face of the temptation to keep this gift exclusively for herself, she apparently decides with Jesus that this is not a selfish gift. She decides to use it for others and particularly for Bill. She decides to fulfill her agreement to help the world situation.
With this key decision made, it's as if the final barrier has been swept aside. Helen now writes this message from Jesus. You will see miracles through your hands through me. This is the first line of what would become the miracle principles. The dictation of A Course in Miracles has begun. I have goosebumps all over. This is just so beautiful. Just first of all, where it says, we just read this, she decides to fulfill her agreement to help the world situation. That to me, so this is not a selfish gift. This is for others. She's doing this. She's bringing us the course to help the world situation. Miracle working does not mean we are just protecting our own peace. It does not mean that I am just going to go sit up on a mountaintop and just find inner peace for myself. Helping the world situation means bringing the love that we feel within us forward, seeing it in our brothers, awakening it in them, awakening it in ourselves. So I'm really moved by how it says she decides to fulfill her agreement to help the world situation. And these are the first lines, like literally we just got a snapshot of what was happening right before A Course in Miracles started coming through. The first thing she writes down, the beginning of the course in this edition, because it's the beginning of her notes, You will see miracles through your hands, through me. So her sort of struggle here in this second part about her ego kind of getting in the way, how relatable is this to all of us? This happens all the time on like a daily moment-to-moment basis where we are constantly needing to check in. You know, is this Corinne wanting this? Is this Corinne wanting something? Is this Corinne deciding? Or is this Corinne stepping out of the way and allowing a choice to be made for me? So this is a moment-to-moment decision. And you can see here Helen having gone through this herself and her deciding to be used, to allow her gift to be used to help others and to help the world. And it's amazing how that ego voice distorts our guidance. So just like it says, Helen's urge to keep her gift to herself is warping her hearing. I love how it says that. Our ego voice will warp the guidance that comes through. And so as Uma was reminding us before about just getting super open and releasing expectations, totally dropping what we think we desire, what we think we want, what we think we know, we're much more likely to be that clear channel for that guidance to come through us. And this is the first night in the history of the study group that we read 9 pages. Oh yeah, thank you, Laurel. Thank you for reading with me. So we have a couple minutes left. I'd love to hear anybody have a comment or a question, anything you want to share. Aida? Did I say it right?
Aida. Like the opera, Aida. I have to tell you, I got the goosebumps just like you did at the very end. I just started an energy healing practice. And before every session, I always ask to make me an instrument of love and healing. Mm. And because I know it's not me that's doing the healing. I know that. And this last line that you read, you will see miracles in your hands through me, just gave me these, I was just like, just goosebumps all over, you know, and it's just a constant reminder that it's not us, our ego us, mm-hmm. you know, it's the source, God, coming through us. And with this new practice with my hands, it just resonated and just, I just felt it and I'm still feeling it right now. So yeah, beautiful.
Oh, that's beautiful. Thank you so much. I really resonate with that too. And it's really moving to me to hear that line, to read that line. You will see miracles through your hands, through me. You're absolutely right. This is what we are here to get out of the way and to be miracle workers, to let this love come through us and lighten up other minds, thus awakening our own minds. Oh, thank you. Anybody else? Laurel.
I've been listening to Tina Spaulding, who's channeling Jesus for 40 days and 40 nights. And one of the things that Jesus is talking about is how in this time that we are going to be coming more into our ability to get this inner guidance. It's going to become easier and easier for us to do that. And I just think that's a wonderful thing to know in mm-hmm. terms of confidence and in willingness, you know, to let that happen mm-hmm. Because there's just so much energy, of course, that's coming through for all of us now.
Mm, that's awesome. Thank you. I haven't been watching her videos. I did watch the first one. I was having a conversation with Freedom Cartwright, who's one of the co-hosts in the Love Lens program that we're offering. And Freedom and I were talking about death. And as many of you may have listened to, the most recent podcast I think that I released was on how the body doesn't have to die, how it simply, we stop projecting it. And Freedom said that Tina Louise Spaulding said that death as we know it is going to change. It's going to be a process that's different than what we think of it as now. And I thought that that was just such a liberating thing to hear that from another channel. Thank you. Anybody else before we go? John. Hi, John.
Hello, Corinne. I just want to say thank you for presenting this. And I'm just so happy to be here and join with you guys.
Oh, I'm so happy you're here. I'm giving you a big hug. I'm giving you all the biggest hug through the screen. It's just like thrilling to be able to see you. And Carla, there's Carla. Hi, honey.
Yeah.
Hi, Carla. Aw. Yeah, so thank you, everyone. So we'll be here every week reading the Cameo essays. Like I said already, they are varying lengths. So we'll just take it as it comes and keep our conversation going. And yeah, we get to hang out here on Zoom now. So thank you, everybody. And I'll see you next week. I love you all.
Thank you, Adrian.
Thank you.
Bye. Bye, Adrian.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye, everybody.
Love you.
Love you all.
Adrian.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.